We are? Oh, good. Thanks. Good evening. My name is Mark Laredo. I'm a counselor at large from Ward 7. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee. I'm going to take a moment to introduce my colleagues from the City Council, then staff, and then I'm going to let Peter Dorringer introduce the members of the Planning Development Board. Then we will go over our protocol for this evening. We only have two items on. The first is a consistency ruling, which I anticipate will be very short, and then we'll get right to the Sunrise petition, which is what I anticipate by virtually everybody here. Immediately in front of me is Councilor Drake Auchincloss, Councilor at Large from Ward 2. Behind him is Councilor Scott Lennon, President of the City Council and Councilor at Large from Ward 1. Stepping into the room is Councilor Allison Leary, Ward Councilor from Ward 1, not a member of the committee. To my immediate right is Councilor Rick Lipoff, Councilor at Large from Ward 8, a member of the committee. Seated over to my far right is Nadia Khan, our committee clerk. Then we have Rita Young from the Legal Department, Michael Gruba from the Law Department. Franklin, I'm not going to introduce you because you don't work here. I should, but I'll let Steve take care of that. Peter, you want to quickly introduce your colleagues? Wonderful. If I could, remind everyone we are being audio taped. So why don't we start off with the consistency ruling, which is a consistency ruling regarding special permit 424-13 at 33 Needham Street. Mr. Gleba, are you going to present that for us? Is the architect from the project here? Come on up, please, sir. Okay. President Lennon, could you, is the microphone on there?
Thank you.
We've been joined by Councilor Greg Schwartz, Councilor at Large from Ward 6, and Vice Chair of the Committee. Go ahead, please, Mr. Riley.
So this is a simple petition. I actually have a couple of slides on this USB drive if somebody wants to pop them up. Basically, at 33 Needham Street, the rear building was sold, and we're in the process of building that building out. As a part of that process, we need to provide some handicapped parking for that building, which requires us to reorganize some of the parking in the existing parking lot. And I'm proposing a new ramp that will relocate two parking spots to a different portion of the site to make room for the handicap ramp.
And did the commissioner ask you to come in here and seek a consistency ruling on this? Or?
Correct, okay. Yes.
Give you a second to get warmed up here. Okay. Do you want to walk us through, Mr. Riley?
Sure. Rotate it. So, alright, there we go. Alright, so the new proposed ramp is along the building right here. We did many options and this seemed to be the most logical option. In order to get the correct access ways for the automobiles, we pushed the parking spaces forward. We subtracted one spot from this location, one spot from this location, and relocated those two parking spots over to here.
Okay.
And it's as simple as that.
Okay. Councilor Schwartz?
I apologize, Mr. Chairman, I came late, but did we have the previous board order that this is asking for consistency on in front of us? I don't recall this property. That's why I'm having a little difficulty figuring it out.
I don't recall it. I don't think it was in the packet, Mr. Grieva, was it?
Well, so we do have the site plan for that.
The site plan is on this PDF. I think two or three slides up if you want it.
The old site plan, the one that was approved?
Yes, that's correct.
I think that's probably more important for us in the board order, but I agree that we need to look at that.
Can you refresh our memory on when that was approved?
2014. I'm not sure of the month.
Okay.
Can you speak into the microphone?
What business is in this building?
What business is going in this building?
It's going in.
It's an internet services company.
Okay. So.
There it is.
Was this the one near Oak Street? Am I correct on that?
Excuse me?
Is this the one near Oak Street, folks, or am I thinking?
This is right on Needham Street. The auto tire place is, this building right there.
Oh, right near the new TV.
National Lumber.
Okay, yeah. Okay, now I know.
That's correct. We had
so many petitions on Needham Street lately that were...
And which side of the street is it? Is it across from the tire place? Or just beside?
It's behind it.
We've been joined by Councilor Deb Crosley, Councilor at Large from Ward 5, who wants to maybe help educate us.
I can't help educate you. I remember the petition, and it is KS Partners who owns the building.
That's
is that correct?
Correct? Yes.
I wish that Alexandra was here at this moment because the petition we approved has been in violation of its special permit for some time. It would be helpful to look at the previous plan with this plan to understand if you're making those corrections, because I'm sure that John Lojek is aware of this because there have been communications with KS Partners for some time about making sure that the easement has been approved for the egress through Easy Street for the bikeway. There was some overpaving done from the site plan that was approved. There is supposed to be a marked egress, and people are not supposed to park in front of it. People have been consistently parking in front of the egress so that they're really, somebody has to,
which part of the building are you talking about?
It's the whole site that's owned by KS Partners, isn't that correct?
Yeah.
So I think what you're talking about is the one-story building up at the top by the...
So, one thing I just want to make clear is KS Partners owns the site, but my client bought the little building in the back, and so we're just making amendments to try to get the handicap ramp in for that little building.
So, your client is not KS Partners?
No.
And they purchased a part of this site from KS Partners?
As a condo or something.
Whose land is it that the parking is on? Is it your client's or is it KNS's?
I believe the parking lot is owned by KNS Partners.
Okay.
This option has been approved by them to restrike this parking.
No, that's fine. We're just trying. I mean, we're not. It's not meant as a criticism. Yeah. We're just trying to find out who the ownership is, and the condominium typically common area would be owned by a condominium association or someone else, and not an individual unit owner, which is effectively what your client is.
Right,
Councilor.
I believe it is set up as a condominium.
Councilor Lennon, and then I think
just in relation. Thank you, Mr. In relation to Councilor Crossley's concerns, what exactly are we being asked to do?
It
sounds like she's raising some legitimate concerns. Are we being asked to address those? Because obviously the commissioner bumped it here.
We're not being asked to address those concerns. My understanding is that they're looking for a couple of relatively straightforward modifications. One is with the handicap ramp, which they need to put in, and they're putting in a certain location. And because of that, they need to move two parking stalls. We're being asked to approve move. Is there anything else besides those two items?
The only other thing is the location of a emergency generator.
Okay, and that's going to be near the handicap ramp, is that?
The generator is not. No,
you'll just show us where that's going to be?
Sure.
So, thank you, President Lennon. I think, Councilor Crosley, your concerns are well taken. I'm not sure when we're here for a consistency ruling, if that's really within our purview or not.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure either, and I was confused by this when I read through the materials earlier. And I guess what I'd like to be assured is that by selling a portion of the site to someone else, but still having control over the parking, any waiver that's being granted or a consistency ruling that's being approved for this property not further put the what we've approved already into further noncompliance.
I think it's a valid point. From what I'm hearing, there are different issues, and nothing you're describing sounds like it addresses or interferes with the concerns you had. But, you know, I would ask Mr. Rowley, even though it's not your client, you clearly hear the concerns that have been expressed about the project. They can get conveyed. That would be helpful. All right, you're going to show us the location of that emergency generator?
Sure. Right there.
Okay. All right. Okay. Questions, Councilor Schwartz?
I'm sorry. So can you just point out what is moving and what the previous plan was? Maybe you could show us on the previous plan what you're changing. That would be more helpful than this one.
Yeah, that's actually the previous sketch. But in short, we're taking one spot away from... So we are removing one spot from this bank of spots. Previously there were 8 spaces there, so we're going down to 7, and that was to relocate one handicapped spot that was existing from here to at the end of the ramp, which makes a lot of sense from a safety perspective to have both handicapped spaces next to each other. And we are taking this spot and sliding and removing that and relocating the access to get to the adjacent building right there with the handicapped space flipped onto the other side of it. And the 2 spaces that are getting removed from here are getting put over here by the back corner.
So there's no net loss of spaces.
That's correct.
Any other comments or questions? Councilor Lipoff?
I think this is pretty straightforward. We're trying to put handicapped spots in the right place. We're gaining the spots over there. The generator is far to the back. I think this is fine. The other issues that Councilor Crosby may have are probably some of the same ones we all do, but I don't think it's pertinent for tonight.
Why don't we do this? It's a consistency ruling, so we do not vote on a consistency ruling. I think, can I just get a kind of a show or nod of heads? Is there anybody who's concerned about the consistency here? All right. Seeing none, I think Mr. Gruber and Mr. Rowley, you can convey to the commissioner that we find your proposal consistent. Councilor Crosley?
I'm just not going to go along with that determination because I just don't feel that I have enough information. This has nothing to do with what you're asking for. It seems like a very reasonable and simple request. But I don't understand if there's any overlap with the ownership of the parcel as it was presented to us in 2014 for the special permit that we granted. And I do have continuing concerns with the owner of the property being in noncompliance. I hope that there's an update on that soon. They were supposed to be in compliance as of the spring, and it's not yet.
Well, why don't you, Mr. Gleba, why don't you, or Ms. Kahn, convey to the commissioner that I think the majority of the committee felt this was consistent, but at least one counselor had concerns about whether are not there for consistency ruling given the current state of the project. Is that fair? Okay. All right, yes, Councilor Schwartz.
Why don't we docket something for a consistency ruling for all the things that you find inconsistent and bring them in with anything else that you feel they haven't done yet?
It's in the hands of ISD and the planning department right now. The committee know there's been several letters that have gone back and forth and timelines that have been established, and if the owner is not compliant within a period of time, ISD will take its own action.
We don't have any, just so we're clear, I think we ought to be really clear. We don't have any enforcement capabilities. We're being asked very narrow question: is the proposal that the architect's submitting, in our view, consistent or not with what we approved? Councilor Schwartz?
Two comments. I'm fine with that, except I would just echo Councilor Crossley's, just at least her interest in hearing, or at least interest in having a communication back to the commissioner of ISD that we're interested in where the rest of the enforcement action is going on this. We're not enforcing it, but we'd like to know that, you know, as this is going forward with this change in the plan, just want to make sure that the other issues are being addressed.
Ms. Khan, could you perhaps tomorrow or Thursday communicate with the commissioner, express that the committee would like some update on what's going on in terms of ongoing problems with this, and perhaps an email or a letter to that effect would be really helpful. And if you want to email him and copy us to convey that would be, I think, appropriate.
My only other comment is just with the movement of the generator, I don't think that that's a problem, but if it's being moved closer to the greenway, that might be. Is it going to be up against that, the park?
It will not be up against it. There'll be a building in between the generator and the greenway.
Perfect.
Okay.
That's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Riley. I think you've got our sense of everything, and speak to the commissioner.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. All right. Next, for the main item, we have 60-17, a request to rezone Hovey Street Parcel, Sunrise Development, Inc., 431 Washington Street, LLC, and then a related item, which is 61-17, special permit petition to construct elderly housing on Washington Street, same petitioners. Both of these are in Ward 1. I'm going to take up, let Attorney Bookbinder speak. I do have one item that's last on the agenda. Do we need to act on this at all, or has just been postponed? So if anybody is here on 19-13, which is 129 Cabot Street, that has been postponed to April 13th. I trust no one's here for that. But if you are, that is postponed to April 13th. Okay? All right, so what we're going to do this evening is we're going to have a presentation by the petitioner of 20 or so minutes. We then are going to hear briefly from the planning department to provide us with a quick overview of the project. My intent is then to take public comment from any member of the public who wishes to be heard, and then open it up to questions and comments from counselors and members of planning development. And we are not going to vote this out this evening. There's a number of reasons for not doing so. One is that there's some mechanics that need to be worked through. So I anticipate we'll put this on probably end of April. Is that our meeting date then, Ms. Khan? We don't, the last week of April? Alright. We'll between now and the time you're finished, Ms. Khan will figure out where on the calendar we're going to put it. With that, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Land Use Committee, and Mr. Chairman and members of the Planning Board. For the record, my name is Stephen Bookbinder. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Schlesinger and Bookbinder, with offices at 1200 Walnut Street in Eden Highlands. I am here this evening on behalf of Sunrise Development, Inc., which hopes to develop the site at the corner of Washington Street and Hovey Street in Eden Corner. The proposed project requires both a special permit for various relief and a change of zone for a portion of the site from multi-residence 2 to business use 2. With me tonight are the following members of the development team: Philip Crosston of Sunrise, Mark Moeller of JSA, our architect, Randy Hart of VHB, our traffic engineer, Leslie Wise of VHB, our civil engineer, Connie Sands of LSC Landscape Architecture, our landscape architect, and my associate Franklin Schwarzer. There will be several aspects to our presentation this evening. First, I will provide an overview of the proposed development. Then, Philip Crosston will share with you Sunrise's mission. Third, Mark Moeller will address the architectural design of the proposed building, following which Connie Sands will discuss the landscape design and open space. Then Randy Hart will address traffic management and propose infrastructure improvements. And finally, I will discuss designing the lease which the project requires. And we're then available to answer any and all of your questions. With respect to the site, you'll see on the aerial here, this is the site, which is highlighted in yellow. It turns out to be green. There are basically two lots. This is the lot which is shown for business use. On Washington Street, this is Hovey, this is Jewett. This is the first of the two properties zoned multi-residence, and this is the final piece back here. Currently, or previously I should say, this was used as the quarry operation. This parcel was used for parking, and this is open space in the back. The site contains approximately 66,909 square feet. As I've indicated, these are the three parcels which comprise the site. It's shown on the existing conditions plan. My client is seeking to demolish the existing building and to create a new elderly housing with services community in its place. I should say, in the context of the request for change of zoning, that the entire site has been used as part of the auto dealership for many years. next shot. The petitioner is proposing a new four-story building, and it's outlined here in gray, and you'll hear more about that from Mark. There would be 85 living units, which would in turn support 122 beds. This is not a nursing home, it's assisted living, so if we get into more detail as to what that means. Additionally, we're providing a total of 46 parking spaces on site, 43 of which are in an underground garage, and there are three at grade in this courtyard shown right here. By putting the parking underground, my client has been able to provide more open space on the site, including two new pocket parks, one here and one to the rear, which Connie will discuss in further detail. With that, I'd like to ask Philip to tell you a bit more about Sunrise.
Good evening. My name is Philip Crofton. I'm the Senior Vice President of Real Estate at Sunrise Senior Living. I'd like to tell you a little bit about my company. First, I'm extremely proud to be here and represent Sunrise, and I'm extremely excited about the opportunity to bring Sunrise and our resident-centered care to the citizens of Newton. Sunrise provides an individualized senior care in a safe and nurturing environment. Since we opened our first community 35 years ago, our mission has been clear: to champion the quality of life for all seniors. We believe each day for our residents is an opportunity to live with purpose, for them to engage, enjoy, express, learn, and grow. We operate 315 communities in the UK, Canada, the United States, and we serve in excess of 30,000 residents. Here in Massachusetts, we currently have 11 communities. While we are international in our size, we are very proud to say that each property clearly serves its local community. Our statistics show that 70% of our resident population come from a radius of either 3 or 5 miles, or more importantly, a 10 to 15 minute drive time to each community. In Newton, there's a significant lack of assisted living units to serve the current population, let alone the massive growth in that population over the next 10 to 20 years. Within 3 miles of this site, there are 7 total comparable communities, within and outside of Newton, I might add. For the National Investment Center, which is our industry entity that provides data and analytics, in the first quarter of 2016, occupancy of those 7 competitors was above 92% for both assisted living and for memory care. That's significant. Our statistics also confirm this information based on both supply and demand ratios. Without a doubt, this market is truly significantly underserved. Our location at the former Nissan dealership is truly ideal for the Sunrise community. We provide a beautiful transitional use between the commercial on Washington Street and the residential homes down Hovey and Stewart Street. Certainly a more compatible use than that of the current car dealership and repair shop. While preparing for this hearing, we held two community meetings with the adjacent neighbors and those of the wider neighborhood. We also have met individually with some of the adjacent homeowners to discuss very specific impacts that they were concerned about. As a result of those meetings, we have made significant changes to both the building and to the landscaping. Everybody is extremely proud of the building that we've designed. It's designed to have a gorgeous, sophisticated front facade and a carport that embraces the residents and the visitors as they enter off of Washington Street. And it fits beautifully into the surrounding residential neighborhood. In fact, we've reduced the size of the building quite dramatically from 100 units originally to 85 units after the community meeting. And we set the building down from four stories down to one story as you travel down along Hovey Street to integrate it better into the neighborhood. And we've also set the building down from four stories to three stories for those buildings along Jewett Street. This was all done to ensure that the height of the building did not overwhelm the neighbors and would be consistent with what you see with the homes and buildings that are two, three, and four stories in the surrounding block. Additionally, as a way to integrate our care model, our community supportive culture, into the surrounding area, we've offered to construct two public parks. This is unique for Sunrise and exciting for us. At this point, it should be noted, however, that the only way we're able to do that is because we dropped the parking underground, which is not only just the right decision, but also, as you can understand, an expensive decision. But it was important for the character of this project. The park on Washington Street is intended to be a pocket park for the use of the community and our residents to sit in the shade or play a game of chess while enjoying the hustle and bustle of the city. The park to the rear along Hovey is intended to be a way to give back to that neighborhood by providing both a contemplative space and a play space. Both of these parks will be offered to the public for their use, and Sunrise will maintain those parks. We also look forward to working with our neighborhood religious institutions, YMCA, local schools to create programming and outreach efforts that will serve both young and old in this community. As you can imagine, this project will be a significant investment into the city of Newton. We will be adding up to 150 construction jobs, and while our largest shift has between 25 and 30 employees, our total payroll for all three shifts will employ between 60 and 70 full-time equivalents. We will also be adding significant new tax revenue over the next 10 years of approximately $2.5 million. Most importantly, however, with all this being said, we just generally look forward to serving the residents of Newton. With that, I'd like to ask Mark Morris to come up and discuss the architecture in more detail.
Thank you. We've been joined by Councilor Jim Cody, Councilor at Large from Ward 3, and a member of the committee.
Thanks, sir. Bridget, thank you. Good evening. My name is Mark Moeller, design principal with JSA Architects of Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I'd like to begin by just sharing an overview of some of the highlights of this Sunrise community, beginning with the program. As Philip said, we have 85 units with common amenities, including dining rooms, living rooms, lounges, a bistro, fitness rooms, entertainment rooms. All of the resident meals are prepared in a common commercial kitchen on the ground floor and distributed to the various dining rooms throughout the building. Residents do not cook in the rooms in their units. In fact, there are no kitchens in their units. All of their meals are prepared for them in the common amenities. We have assisted living units on floors 1 and 2, and the memory care, the reminiscence units, are located on floors 3 and 4. And each of those units, both levels, have direct access to a secure outdoor terrace, getting daylight on the north side of the building. And we've already talked about the 43 parking spaces in the below-grade garage that's accessed through this motor court that you see on the front of the building. And there are three additional surface parking spaces also in this courtyard. A bit of an overview showing the context. This is just an aerial view giving you a sense of the neighborhood. So what we've done is try in this view is try to show the relationship to some of the larger residential and commercial properties that are along Washington Street and to some extent along Jewett Street. There's a variety of heights that that these buildings are already at. For instance, the large residential building at the corner of Jewett and Washington Street is roughly 49 to 50 feet tall. A lot of the homes, single-family and multifamily homes along Jewett Street, are roughly 35 feet tall. Our project, as you see right here in the center of the slide, is this L-shaped plan, which I'll get to in a moment, is consistent with the height at this corner. And in fact, the house is directly adjacent that abuts our property. Is 40 feet high, and then the single-story commercial property farther down Washington Street, the Walgreens and the Honda Village, those are in the ballpark of 22 feet high. So as I said, this building is organized in an L shape. So this is a little bit different orientation. So just to get everyone oriented, this is Washington Street running vertically on this slide, Hovey Street across the bottom. So, you know, basically this building is roughly an L shape, particularly on the upper floors. So what you're seeing, this bit of a tail here on the back, is the stepped portions that Philip alluded to, even stepping down to a single story at the extreme edge of the building. As we said, we have a vehicular motor court off of Washington Street. The front door is accessed through a covered drop-off, and this ramp, which descends down into the underground garage, is also accessed off of this courtyard. So no vehicles serving this building that are using the parking garage are using the side streets. Everything is coming in off of Washington Street. And also responding to the neighborhood feedback and the reduction in the number of units from 100 to 85, we're also able to reduce not only the mass of the building, but the actual footprint as well. And the net effect of that is this outside edge at the rear was able to move to the left on this slide, you know, roughly 14 feet from our earlier design. So that was helpful. And then, as I said, that tail of the building steps from four stories to three stories, and then ultimately down to one. So this is a view looking at the back of the building from Harvey Street, and here you can start to appreciate the four-story component, and it steps down to three. This is one of those covered secure terraces that I mentioned a moment ago, and then stepping further down to a single story, which is where the commercial kitchen and deliveries would be. You do see a curb cut here. There was one service, I guess I'd call it a parking space for delivery vehicles. It's not a loading dock. We're expecting very small-scale delivery vehicles there. And also directly adjacent to it, there is a trash enclosure that is a significant structure in itself. It has a roof. It has the same kind of masonry cladding. Architectural character will be the same as the building, so it's definitely not a forgotten element. It's designed to blend nicely with the building, and it's also, as you can see, also screened by landscaping. In addition to its architectural character, it does have screening. The architectural features, going back to the original first slide, so the architectural character and form are directly inspired by the larger residential buildings on the same block, particularly the large building I pointed out earlier on the corner of Washington and Jewett Street. The exterior is defined by a palette of multicolored patterned brick with precast accents. There's projecting bay windows and covered porches at street level that offer a bit of human scale elements that help it relate to the residential abutters. I've gone over the step massing. You can just start to see it off to one side. It steps from four stories down to three, and then you just saw the stepping on the rear of the property on the previous slide. These buildings are fully sprinkled buildings and built of non-combustible materials. And this building is also an ENERGY STAR certified community. The ENERGY STAR certification signifies that these buildings perform in the top 25% of similar buildings nationwide for energy efficiency and meet strict performance levels set by the EPA. These communities use an average of 35% less energy and release 35% less carbon dioxide than typical communities of this type. With that, we're going to transition to the landscape features. I want to introduce our colleague, Connie Fan, who will go through the landscape.
Good evening. My name is Connie Fan, a design principal with the firm LST Landscape Architecture, located in Tysons, Virginia. And I'm also a certified healthcare garden designer. And it's my pleasure to be here tonight to share with you the landscape design for the Sunrise Newton site. The landscape design seeks to transform a formerly commercial dealership site to an urban respite. It is a place where families can bring their kids to take a stroll in a labyrinth and enjoy the nature-themed playscape. It is also a place where beloved senior residents can interact freely with neighbors, watch kids play, or simply seek solace in a beautiful, secure garden space. As Steve mentioned earlier, the site is approximately 66,909 square foot, or approximately 1.536 acres, out of which approximately 16,000 square foot is a green space to the north side. The rest of the site is occupied either by the Nissan building or the paved parking lot. Critical to the success of the landscape design is the preservation of the existing wooded area and the buffer along the property's western and northern edge. The eastern edge and the northern edge are the area where we propose to preserve the wood. And the proposed site design preserves the green space, and not only preserves the green space, but also enhances it with additional landscape. In addition to the program uses, it represents roughly about 14% reduction in impervious surfaces, so approximately 44,000 square foot of green space set aside for community use or resident use. Along the two public right-of-way, the design provides approximately 235 linear foot of streetscape improvement. Along Washington Streetscape, and also along Harvey Street, it's approximately about 350 linear foot of streetscape improvement. Along Harvey Street, in addition to, as what Mark described earlier, the setback of the buildings, on the street level, what we are, the development intend to do is underground the existing overhead utilities, provide new sidewalk. In addition to that, there will be lush landscape at the base of the building that provides more of an urban, lush green nook. The design consists of three unique spaces. One, the 420 square foot pocket park of Washington Street, 670 square foot of green space on the north side that features a labyrinth and some natural play, and approximately 10,000 square foot of a secured, gated resident garden
that features outdoor kitchen, dining patio, horticultural therapy, gardening plot, and wandering path. The next slide that shows the pocket park. The pocket park is an intimate urban oasis, or simply a relief from an otherwise urban street front, where residents can interact with the neighbors, play a chess game, or simply chat about the weather situation. Here, the next slide shows the park on the north side. It features a labyrinth and natural themed play. The labyrinth is designed at the base of the existing stand of trees. Labyrinth historically is used for private meditation. It has been used extensively recently in hospital, senior housing, and schoolyard for its healing and therapeutic benefits. In this case, we see it as a design feature that not only benefits the residents, but also the community surrounding the property area. And the next slide shows the resident garden, the 10,000 private gated resident garden that features a very generous gazebo as its center feature. In summary, the development will transform an urban commercial site to a beautifully designed residential building that is in harmony with its residential surroundings, provide an open public space that would benefit the surrounding community. Thank you very much. I'm going to have Randy talk about the traffic.
Well, good evening. I'm Randy Hart with Vanessa Hagen and Bruxen. I'm the principal, and we developed the traffic impact and access study for the proposed project. Prior to embarking on that work, we sat with city staff to discuss what an appropriate study area would be for this effort, and based on that discussion, we have a study area of 5 intersections, which are depicted by the orange dots on the map here. At each of those 5 intersections, we did a lot of things. First of all, we collected manual turning movement and traffic counts during 2 critical periods. We did it during the 7 to 9 commuter peak hour in the morning. We did it during the 4 to 6 p.m. commuter peak hour in the afternoon. It's during those 2 periods when the combination of site-generated traffic coupled with traffic already on the roadway is at its most critical level. We also collected accident records at all 5 locations to get a feel for the accident frequency and any issues that might exist. And by looking at the traffic volume data, the accident records, and performing intersection operational analyses during the 2 critical periods I just mentioned, we're able to get a very clear picture of existing traffic conditions in this particular area, and that served as the basis of the traffic study itself. The next step in looking at traffic is to look into the future. And to look into the future, we have to look at at least 3 different things, maybe more. In this particular instance, we had to identify what other intersection or roadway improvement projects were proposed in the area and likely to have an influence on traffic conditions. Second, we had to identify other development projects or redevelopment projects that are proposed in the area and what influence traffic from those developments would have. And then third, maybe most importantly, we had to understand what the change in traffic will be at the proposed site. Going from a car dealership to an assisted living, what does that mean from a traffic generation perspective? We utilize standard procedures to identify the change that is expected, and as you can see in this table, on a daily basis, we expect a significant reduction in traffic to the site, as much as 930 vehicle trips over the course of the day. And then during the 2 critical peak hour periods, the morning peak hour first, we expect about 53 trips, plus or minus a few, would be reduced, and then the evening peak hour, about 64 trips reduced by the change in use. So, as you can see, this is clearly a much less intensive use of the land from a traffic perspective. While it is a less intensive use of the land from a traffic perspective, we still see some changes that are needed and necessary, and we are proposing them as part of this project. First, under existing condition, the site's accessed by 4 points of access today, one on Washington Street. Oh, it's not working on this slide. Okay, thank you. There's an existing access in this location here, and there's basically three curb cuts on Hovey Street. Under the redevelopment plan, we plan to consolidate those four curb cuts down to two, with really one primary access located directly on Washington, directly across from the Church Street Bridge. And as already mentioned by Mark, there would be a secondary access on Hovey, which would serve primarily for delivery purposes. We don't see a lot of activity being at that driveway. So really, the focus of traffic at the site will be at one driveway as opposed to four in the future. To ensure that that driveway works as well as it can work in the future, we want to make a few adjustments. Under existing conditions, this driveway which exists is not under the signal control. Okay, so the signal controls Church Street and Washington, eastbound, westbound. It does not control the site driveway. We want to change that. We want to bring the site driveway into the signal. And in order to do so, there's a series of modifications that are required at the signal, some new signal heads. We need some sensors in the roadway. We need to modify slightly the pedestrian accommodation. The city has asked that we upgrade the pedestrian accommodation to include countdown timers and both audible and visual countdown timers, and we plan to do just that. So the signal...
Well, can you just be clear? So that's something that the petitioner is going to pay for in its entirety?
Yes.
Is that correct? Go ahead, please.
Yes, it is. And there was another request by the neighborhood. They asked us to look at some conditions at Hovey and Washington, and we did, and that's identified in the report. But one thing that we are going to implement right out of the gate is a do not block intersection pavement delineation, as well as signage to support it on the side of the street. So those are planned improvements as part of the project, the consolidation of access, the changes to the signal, and the do not block intersection signs.
To follow up on one point Randy made with respect to deliveries, and we had discussed this at the two community meetings, we would be willing to restrict deliveries to Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., except in the event of emergencies. With respect to the zoning relief, we need special permit relief for elderly housing with services. We need relief for a development of more than 20,000 square feet. We need relief for a four-story building. We need relief for a retaining wall of greater than 4 feet located in a setback. That's to accommodate the retaining wall for the driveway leading to the underground garage. And finally, we have a non-conforming front setback that we would be looking to maintain. With respect to parking, the proposed project, as I've noted, will provide 46 stalls on site, 3 outdoor in the courtyard, 43 underground. 40 stalls are required pursuant to the zoning ordinance, so we'd be exceeding the minimum amount required. The parking spaces all meet the dimensional requirements of the zoning ordinance. Sunrise has found that most residents do not have cars. I should emphasize the average age of our residents are 85, 86 years old, and that about 50% of the employees take public transportation. As such, from a practical perspective, the proposed 46 parking stalls on site seem more than sufficient to meet the anticipated demand. Section 5.11.11 of the zoning ordinance addresses inclusionary zoning for elderly housing with services use. If you've read the provision, you will, I'm sure, agree that it's not as clear as one might hope. We've discussed this issue with the planning department. We believe that a lump sum payment would make the most sense, and we hope to work with the planning department to come up with a figure for your consideration between now and the next hearing. With respect to the planning department report, it's generally supportive of the project. Specifically, the planning department finds that the project is thoughtfully designed, provides publicly accessible open space amenities, and is consistent with the adopted comprehensive plan and can help address some of the needs of the city's large and growing elderly population. The planning department has requested both a shadow study and a photometric plan, both of which we're happy to provide prior to the next hearing. I also wanted to confirm a few of the other minor points addressed in the planning department memorandum. First, and I think Connie actually already mentioned this, utilities will be underground. Second, we reviewed the plans for the project with the fire department. The fire department has stamped their site plan for access and egress, and we provided a stamped copy to the planning department. With respect to the engineering division, we will work to address any issues that have been raised by Mr. Dannegan between now and the next hearing. With respect to sun storage, we anticipate being able to accommodate it on site, but if for any reason that's not possible, we will agree to remove the snow to an off-site location. So, by way of summary, we feel that the proposed facility does serve as a transition between the existing commercial area on Washington Street and the residential neighborhood behind it. We feel that the building has been designed in an effort to complement the character of existing architecture in the neighborhood. We do believe that the facility as proposed will be a substantial improvement over what currently exists at the site, recognizing so well that beauty is always in the eye of the beholder. As mentioned previously, we've had two community meetings which were organized with the assistance and cooperation of the three Woodland counselors. They were held at the YMCA just across the turnpike. Those meetings were both well attended, approximately 40 residents at the first one and 30 at the second. And at least initially, we received a lot of favorable comments. I've only learned as of yesterday that there is some neighborhood opposition. I'm sure you'll hear that tonight. That may include some individuals who did not have an opportunity to attend the initial two community meetings, and I wanted to make this offer tonight. We'd be very happy to host a third community meeting, again working through the Woodland Councilors prior to the next public hearing so that we continue with the dialogue. And that completes our presentation. We're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We've been joined by Councilor Amy Fangiolo, a Councilor Large from Ward 4, and Councilor Jay Harney, Ward Councilor from Ward 4, and a member of the committee. Mr. Gruber, do you want to give us maybe just a very, since we've had a fairly comprehensive presentation, just a brief overview from planning's view, and then I'd like to open it up for public comment.
Okay, so all our presentations are mostly primary measurements and shed, just some observations and differences. The request for relief, which has been going over, is a rezoning and several different special permits to allow the building as designed, including inclusion and housing provisions. According to the council, there's some special permit criteria to consider. These are premised upon the rezoning, otherwise the project would not be possible in the absence of that rezoning. Generally, the criteria for these special permits would be the following. The size of the appropriate location for a building of four stories of 37.4 feet in height, greater than 7,000 square feet, with an FAR of 1.07. Whether the site is in a particular location to the proposed retaining wall, greater than 4 feet. Whether the project is developed and operated for an elevation across the neighborhood. Whether there will be non-entrance or serious housing for vehicles or pedestrians. Whether the access to the site is appropriate for the house and the number of vehicles. So for this event, the entrance side of the building, there's an additional special permit criteria that has to do with the vehicles and the site plan. The building is on construction lane for long-term operation of the premises that contributes significantly to the efficient use and conservation of natural resources and energy. The current building is non-conforming, so the special permit extends the non-conforming setback along the cover, allowing the front setback of 5.6 feet for 10 of the quarters, and certainly no setback, no front setback exists. And then we have this new setback, which is substantially more detrimental than the existing non-conforming use to the neighborhood. And the last criteria brings the project satisfies the requirements of the zoning ordinances, including the zoning provisions. And the two stories, so that the subsequent scenario that we've seen, this is an area map. You can see the site in the center, close to the other pairs of tree trees over the turnpike. This is the current zoning. Orange is business two. You can see how the site is surrounded to the University of North and West by residential spring MRT. In the double forecast left, MR1 will to the west, and we have additional business one further to the east along Washington. And of course, the project will have some properties and some other residential uses, including the guy in today, which is in the northern left-hand corner. Some of you have been done, you see the commercial space lots in Washington, basically to the east of the site, and the residential elsewhere. You see this is the existing site plan. You see the three lots from two to the bottom, they're supposed to be as the residential place where the proposed structure would be. And parking in the northern east lot. The two lots in gray are those that are proposed in the east and are seen to be able to be neutral. You see the site plan. Here you see the elevations and our perspectives. This should be along Washington Street. We're going to show the facade along North Street and have a gray step down to the west. This is going heaven. We're going from the first story to then going further to the building of rent, but we're going to have it stretched down in the general ground. This is from the north, showing the picture where people will perceive as the back or the part of the building that will face the proposed parking park on heaven. This is going to be from the west. This is from the backyard along the Jewett. And then from the start, from the north of the first floor building, setting down to the ceiling, with the tower stage element in the center, and then down to one over the two north. The perspective view of the front, from the vehicular access off, coming off Washington, it also shows in perspective the ramp going down to the basement parking. That's where the proposed retaining wall is. This is from the back, we're going to show the terraces. And how the building goes step back to further step down before the north will come around hardly. One step plan is going to discuss. Very much helpful to see two photos. This is turning the view and existing dealership on the left, looking up Hubble, going to the right, up Hubble from Washington. And we have details looking up Hubble, which is existing commercial on the commercial from the right hand side, with residential further up. This is the opposite view, looking down Hubble towards Washington. The site is to the right. You see over there in the distance existing dealership. Some of the floor to the right of that is the current parking. And then the green space is closest in the photo. Again, all on the right. And on the left of the panel, you can see the front yard of the residential space. And the building is further down. And this is the view where the existing green space most existing parking is roughly, this is the relative of the retaining wall, and there's the back wall of the proposed structure will be roughly cut out a little further than that in some locations, including the different locations of the proposed driveway for deliveries. This is the existing real estate, showing the back walls or the rear facades of the homes on the Jewett. This is looking east on Washington. There's a hotel in the corner in the distance. And you see existing sidewalks and existing structure. And you just see a very wide line condition along Washington. Another very wide line condition. This is essentially the west property line, shared with the residences been to a place, this is an access way to a home and aware of the home to the left, then the current building on the right is a zero set, and so it's existing at zero setback lot length. And so this is another picture of the full length of the existing dealership that exists now. As we discussed before, the planning department will continue to work with the applicant on those issues, including the variances, and also, I believe, we discussed the applicant going to the meeting to the design commission later this month.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Gleba. Are there members of the public who wish to speak this evening? Just a quick show of hands so I can get a head count. All right. We'll start off on this side of the room. We'll start off with the gentleman in front. Protocol's really easy. Come up to the microphone, state your name, your address, and please keep your remarks about 3 minutes or less. Just tell us whatever you want. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, committee members. That's my parliamentary extent. My name is Will Truslow. I live at 110 Jewett Street, which is diagonally across the block from the dealership at the corner of Jewett and Robin. We moved there in 2001. As I stand here today, I must say I oppose the project as it's currently laid out for us. However, I have really enjoyed working with a developer and am hopeful that we can find a way to keep the neighborhood comfortable produce the building Sunrise wants to produce. Just a couple of... my issue mostly is with the massing of the building. And if you might back up to the drawing that Mr. Bookbinder was... Mark Muller was using, showing the axonometric along Washington Street. The building on the corner, the apartment building, was stated earlier, about 50 feet high. The top of these parabets are to be 52 feet high. If you could go back to the one along the whole street, it shows us from the corner of the block, that apartment building, on down to the towards the Honda dealership. Well, we're moving forward. At its tallest point, it will be the tallest thing in the block. The image that I think I want to leave the committee with is that although plans are drawn with north facing up, that's not really our neighborhood. Our neighborhood looks a lot more like that along Jewett Street. Those houses are all 35 feet high, but that's a peak roof. So the actual height of the house is a lot lower. It's probably more like 27 feet. This building at its closest point to the lot line will be 35 feet, and the next step back is 47 feet. Those are the two corners that face the house, the backyards in Jewett, along the Jewett Street. I would love to see a rendering from a developer along the lines of the other two from the backyard along that street, and how this building, so we can all understand how this building looks for the neighbors when it's put up. I don't want to go too long here. The last point I wanted to make was, and we haven't gotten to the rendering yet, but if you go along Washington Street, you start, as you're coming from West Newton, you start at that large apartment building, there's an existing dealership, there's a Walgreens, you go along. That's a wall as you go along there. Those buildings are tall and they're right up to the sidewalk. The current proposal has a large forecourt along Washington Street, and sets most of the massive building back on top of what is currently the parking lot. So From a neighbor's point of view, that's not where we want it. We would like it along Washington Street, continuing that wall along the way. And for my part, I don't know how my neighbors feel, but for my part, if that meant the main vehicle entrance to this development was on Hovey Street, I would be fine with that, if that's where the garage entrance would be. I won't worry about the image, but
thank you, sir. Next, please, gentlemen there, come on up. We'll just move back on this side, then we'll go to that. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Daniel Laurie. I am a homeowner at 33 Robin Street, which is at the end of Hovey Street. I've been there for about 7 years. I am opposed to both the rezoning and the special permit requested by Sunrise. And one of about 100, maybe a little over 100 signers from our neighborhood who are opposed to such a development. One of my main concerns is the rezoning and the creep of commercial property up Hovey Street. As you can see, there's a lot of commercial property right along Washington, but it would be a shame for me to see a couple of housing lots turned into non-housing lots, in my opinion. The other big concern that I'm mainly up here for is just a failure to understand how the Sunrise project will serve our community. One of the indications they had was that it would provide jobs. However, I believe that those would be fairly low-income jobs, and at the public hearing in the YMCA, I understood them to describe that a lot of their the people who fulfill those jobs or who take those jobs are bussed in from outside the community, or bussing in from outside the community. So I'm not necessarily seeing a lot of high income job opportunities being prepared for our community. Second, it's a fairly expensive service that they're offering, and we live in a fairly middle income neighborhood, and I fail to see how the service that Sunrise is providing could really benefit someone like me or my neighbor down the road, who's not going to be able to afford the price tag on the service that they're providing. And I think that maybe we should reconsider the zoning based on this maybe not being the best fit for this community. And I know that it was mentioned that they are planning on serving the residents of this community. But I think, those two points, I hope you'll consider that maybe this isn't the best fit for serving our community. Additionally, they themselves mentioned there's, I think, 7 to 9 other elder care facilities within a 3-mile radius. And while it is true that they are almost at capacity, I still don't feel like this is a strong candidate for affordable elder care living options in our community, especially when you consider that they have indicated that they will be private pay only and not accept Medicare or Medicaid as a for-profit enterprise. I would hope that if we were to look at a facility of this type in this location, that we would want to, someone to come in who would be able to accept that and create a more diverse community in Newton Corner. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Next, please, on this side of the room. Come on up. Come on up, please. And who's ever after this woman, come on up after that, please. Someone on this side. Good evening.
Hi, my name is Wendy Plesniak, and I'm an abutter to this proposed development. I'd like to say that many of us who are here, present, and speaking tonight are doing so as part of the Jackson Homestead Historic Neighborhood Association. We are a new association, but we're comprised of very strongly connected and committed neighbors. And we urge you to please read the detailed objections we've submitted to you tonight and consider them in the spirit of our concerns. I also want to say that we've submitted a petition tonight that has upwards of 120 signatures that we'd like you to look at. Now, I'd like to speak to the second point of our petition, and that is the threat of losing residential lots in our neighborhood. When our family moved here, we were aware that much of Hovey Street was zoned for residential housing. The neighborhood was actively renovated and still is, and growing. And it wasn't a neighborhood full of manicured mansions, right, where no one's outside. People enjoyed socializing and supporting each other. We did our research, and we liked that. So we signed our reams and reams of papers and dumped a big chunk of our lives into the home we live in now. My husband and I are parents of a 7-year-old daughter, and she now has dear little playmates in the neighborhood. It's great, and we reasonably hope that more families can do what we did, which is move out of the city and move to a neighborhood like Newton Corner and enliven it there further for all of us. We have now Sunrise Development, who wants to commercially zone 75% to 80% of our side of Holy Street, and wants to earn its profits on our street. After 2 years of demolition and very heavy construction of this looming building that doesn't look like other buildings in our family neighborhood, it's going to increase traffic every day for us. We know that. And it's going to impose a parking burden on our streets. We abutters know how this is going to impact the way we use and enjoy the neighborhood and the way our children do. And we also know how this is going to hurt our property values and those of all the abutting neighbors, while other residents in Newton are enjoying a lovely trend of increasing values on their homes. So we find ourselves in the middle of this process, and I want you to understand first that this is particularly burdensome on us, the residents here. We who work and have family responsibilities, we do not have we're not on a corporate payroll to fight this corporate incursion into our little neighborhood, okay? We understand that the pace of and the heft behind this effort are tilted in favor of the commercial, of the professionals who are doing this for a living. We understand that. So we hope you will tonight respect the time we are spending to try to organize ourselves, coordinate ourselves to stop this commercial, to stop this corporation who wants to make a handsome profit on valuable residential and an existing commercial lot. We want to say we do truly enjoy this handy commercial avenue on Washington Street, and we would love to see that revitalized in a way that supports our community in some nice way. But we want to protect the zoning that would allow new affordable family or even senior residential housing on our street. Please, no commercial creep up our street. And importantly, I do want to point out what I think other people may speak to, that there is a precedent established by past aldermen in our neighborhood. This has been eye-opening for us to look through documents in City Hall. So we implore you to try to hold to those past precedents and respect our little family-oriented neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Anybody on this side, come on up, please. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Denise Flanagan. I don't like to speak publicly, but this is very important.
Could you state your address, ma'am, please?
Sure. My home is at 5 Hovey Street.
Go ahead.
I'm a direct abutter to the proposed project. I have attended both Sunrise invitations at the Y. I've listened, I've read the proposal. I have many objections, but I know other people are going to bring them up. My house wasn't even visible on the map, really, although I'm a direct abutter. I've lived on Hovey Street my entire life. I almost didn't recognize the lot lines and where things begin and end when I saw it on the presentation at the Y. But when I walked home, I really tried to focus on it. And just to speak of this to the semantics of people that have worked very hard on this project, and the history of the residential lots on Hovey Street differs from the account in Sunrise's narrative. They haven't all historically been used for business use. In fact, if you go back, the city records will verify that the residents have continuously objected to the petitions. My memory and city records will attest that in our neighborhood on Hovey Street, in this residential piece, there was a house, a home. Clay bought the house. They demolished it. There were families that lived there. No more. A similar process takes place across the street where the Frost Cadillac dealership was. It was sort of a volley back and forth. A house across the street demolished. The Pomeroy House, historic, we can all look it up, not there anymore. Over the years, the owners of Clay, now Clay Nissan, and in the future to be called Sunrise, because I understand Clay is leasing, have petitioned to use these residential lots as commercial lots. In fact, that parking lot is residential. I believe that's a permissive use. My family has lived in the neighborhood for three generations, and for three generations, we've continuously taken the time and energy to maintain our neighborhood, to maintain the boundaries between commercial and residential, to keep residential residential. We have a really nice neighborhood with really nice people. It's behind that. It was referred to as the commercial side. We're not the commercial side. We're a neighborhood. The commercial side is Washington Street. We're down Hovey. I ask that the alderman respect this neighborhood and vote against that rezoning. I would so much rather have another two-family house there. My kitchen overlooks the back of this project, which you don't often see in the proposal. You see the front, which is beautiful. Also, the trees that Clay lined the edges as a buffer that we were promised some time ago, they're not being maintained now, so trees look beautiful when they're planted. I'm sure Sunrise is different, but, you know, we've lived through the experience. I also, my home is a two-family home. We have tenants on the first floor. I know that I would prefer to live next to a two-family. I love the fact that now we're that Frost Cadillac dealership leveled the house. We now have wonderful neighbors, new babies. You can look out your window, and it's wonderful. I know I can count on my neighbors if I am in need, and many of them have helped me. So we have tenants on the first floor. I know I'd prefer to live next to a two-family with new neighbors, or an empty field as it is now, not a four-story, 122-bed facility. There are 85 units, but it's 122 beds. I'm sure that other renters and buyers are going to feel the same way that I do. My realtor, another slight contradiction, has stated that my property value will be negatively affected with the construction of this facility. My rental income is essential to my income and how I afford my house. Any loss would really represent a hardship. It's going to be really difficult to rent my apartment downstairs with 2 years of construction going on. So once again, I ask that the alderman consider the families in the residential neighborhood who will be impacted by this commercialization. These are our homes. And
thank
I know
you,
there
ma'am.
Are other points coming, so I won't repeat them. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Thank you for this opportunity. I'm Julie from Jewett Street. The Newton City website contains a transportation strategy for Newton that raises some concerns about this proposal. Page 5 states that the community has identified a need to alleviate traffic construction and preserve Newton's sense of place and village character as two of the community's priorities. We are concerned that the proposed project will increase traffic and create a new precedent for rezoning the Washington Street area, which is in direct opposition of the community's priorities. Page 7 identifies the roads program as the first priority in states that our roads are currently in poor condition and less safe. On page 14, Washington Street was specifically called out as one of the transportation corridors for transformation. Since the only major route to and from the site is Washington Street itself, this should be a major concern for the Land Use Committee. On page 15, and I don't know if you guys have access to this, but it's on the website. On page 15, the Vision Zero policy identified that there have been 4 fatal accidents within close proximity to the Washington Street corridor in Newton Corner Village, as well as over 10 accidents involving pedestrians in the same zone. We have a significant concern that the burden of heavy moving construction equipment on and off the site, as well as the distraction of a massive construction site, will make a bad situation worse by orders of magnitude. Page 10 identifies insufficient parking, which frustrates customers, businesses, and adds to congestion. The Hovey Jewett Street parking is already in a critical shortage. The additional large number of construction workers, which I heard tonight will be around the 150 number, will have no designated parking spaces and will create havoc for commuters who park on Washington Street and the residents of the surrounding neighborhoods. Using the city's strategic vision as a validated roadmap, please factor these important considerations into your decision on this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please. Come on up, sir.
Hello. I'm Joe Cocazella. I live at 18 Hovey Street, which is, I think, across from the project. And I honestly didn't think I'd be here talking, standing up here talking. I'm a native New Englander, and, you know, we come from a long tradition of throwing off things that are put upon us, you know, back to the 1700s, and I really tried to safeguard against that with me with this. And it takes me time to come to a decision. I gave it some thought, and I went to all the meetings, and I heard a lot about, sorry, I have my thoughts down here, they're all jumbled. I heard a lot about character, community, pride, and it got me thinking. I'm also, you know, and Sunrise shared a vision of how they think the community should be. And it made me think about my community and how I'm also pretty proud of my community and the residents and really the character that it engenders. And my conclusion is that my vision is just different from their vision. And it's really kind of that simple. The area across from my house has been described as an open lot. I don't particularly see it that way. I see it as a potential. I see it as a residential potential. We've been in the area for 6 years. People have talked about the community and the neighbors, and I'm friends with our neighbors. They play with our kids, and we all know each other. And those are the kind of things that foster community and character. So I see that as potential, not so much an open lot from me. And it's kind of what makes our community rich. I could give you examples, but, you know, people have talked about their children playing each other and these sort of things. And to be honest, changing the structure of the building, calling things urban oasis and changing, you know, 10 feet to 5 feet, those aren't things that build character. I think we all pretty much agree with that. That's not character. Character comes from relationships, it comes from communities. I'm not opposing the project. What I'm opposing is it going into our part of the community. Because I appreciate their sentiment. I appreciate the mission statement. I just think that it's misguided and misinformed. I think as a community, we can decide what's best for our community and what's helpful as opposed to having it put on us. I'm a physician, and as a physician, I'm trained to think about what's inside. That's why you call the physician in. I'm trained to recognize sickness, but honestly, I talk to patients a lot about health and what makes things healthy. Our neighborhood is healthy, as our people up here have told you. We're healthy, we like each other, we're all about community, and helping each other out. And I think we know what's best for that. As a physician, I'm also aware about boundaries and what makes good boundaries. I think this is a real threat to our
to our vision of the community if the residential portion is made commercial. It's a porous boundary. In patient care, porous boundaries are bad. It's kind of like a growth coming into a healthy organism. And, you know, again, if somebody who's not very reactionary, it takes a lot to come up here and tell you this. I think that's what's vital for our community. You know, I'm going to live across from a place. Like Wendy was saying, you know, we have an open lot. My kid plays wiffle ball in the front. He's actually pretty good. And he's a four-and-a-half-year-old. And he'll hit the ball. He can hit it across the street and goes over in his lot. I'd like to go over to a lot where I have someone's, you know, neighborhood, where I have a house, where I can go in and pick up the ball and come back. I appreciate that the trash across the street from us is going to be enclosed and it's going to have a very high character and it's going to have a nice building and angles and not going to impinge upon my property value. All the property value, traffic stuff, all that stuff is good, but, you know, Mark Twain said there's lies, damn lies, and statistics, right? I think that's a great quote. So I appreciate that. I just see it differently. I see that's what I would like across from me, and not so much an urban oasis or a trash compactor hid. They're just different visions. I'm hoping that you, the committee, will choose that vision over the former. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Next, please, come on up. Good evening.
Yep. Good evening. My name is Ravi Papu. I live at 38 Walden Street, which is at the other end of Hovey Street. I'm going to give you a little bit of my background, which I'm going to use for the rest of my comments. We've lived for 3.5 years at the corner of Hovey and Walden, and prior to this, my wife and I lived in Cambridge for 20 years, so that we saw both the good side and the bad side of economic development. We profited from it. So we received our PhDs at MIT, and I started a company that I sold, and now I work to enable the U.S. intelligence community to access private sector innovation. So I'm very familiar with the innovation economy. I've spent all my time in it, all my career. And as proposed, I'm opposed to the issuance of a special permit and zoning change. And I support all the immediate reasons that my neighbors provided. But I also want to sort of talk a little bit about a different issue that concerns me. So here's sort of my request to the committee members. So going to allow special permits and zoning changes, it should be for something really important. Sunrise wants to use 68,000 square feet of space and optimistically create 70 full-time jobs. I started a company and we were able to create 70 full-time jobs in about 5,000 square feet of space, which is a 10x improvement in the use of space. So we can create a lot more wealth and economic development in small amounts of space when we don't tie the revenues to the size of the to the building. Secondly, you know, land is such a finite resource, and you know, we're not going to have it's not there forever. So we have to be very careful about locking ourselves in to these long-term developments that generate so little for the city. I think we can and we must do a lot better. Secondly, I don't see the city's businesses, local businesses, around the proposed development benefiting in any way. The residents are not mobile, or many of them are fairly elderly. They're not going to be going around spending money in the towns. The contractors are all national, Aramark or Cisco or whoever it is. Even the architects and the landscape designers are not from this state. They're from New Hampshire and Virginia. So I just don't think that this facility, this use of land here, actually benefits our community in any way. The residents won't be able to afford it. A lot of people have said that. And the workers come from other towns, and the business goes to national corporations. So what's in it for us? And finally, one last point. I know I'm running out of time, but we do all this economic development and spend 40% of our budget on the schools. And we are proud of them. They're some of the best in the country. But every year in July, $220 million of investment walks out of Newton and doesn't come back. So we have to do more to attract entrepreneurs, innovators, to keep our kids here and contribute to our economic development. And I think we really must think hard about these kinds of issues. And I don't think projects like Sunrise are really the answer to that question. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Ma'am, come on up, please. Anybody else from this side of the room, then? All right, if you could just follow this person here. Good evening.
Good evening. I am not as good a talker as my neighbors. I am. Please pardon me. I'd like to say hello to all my neighbors.
Your name
is? My name is Liliana Rufo, and I'm here also for my daughter, Donatella Cedroni. We live on 437 Washington Street, which is the house behind 439, which was a funeral home years ago. And I also have 146 Jewett Street, and the houses are back to back. So the 437 is right against the wall of Newsom. I guess I'm in the minority here because everybody, and I appreciate what they're saying, and I thought of everything that you were stating, and that those were my thoughts also. But seeing the project, and the building is not a big, huge four, it's leveled in different ways. And I appreciate the landscaping very much, and I think they try to make it as much of a neighborhood friendly as I guess. So I am for it. I didn't think I would be, but I am. And it's assisted living, and I think we will all get older, and I think it's something that we could go in and not volunteer, but maybe meet some and integrate with these people, because we are going to be one of them one day. I don't know. I can understand if they talk about the size, but I think it is commercial right now. It's tabular, so it is commercial. There's nothing pretty about it. I think this will make it nicer. We can have the landscaping, the parks. We can share, and I think for me and for my daughter, we would hope this will go through. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Next, please, come on up. Anybody else from this side of the room, then? All right, I'll take that side then. Good evening, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Michelle Casabula, and I grew up on Hovey Street. My father bought his first home at 4 Hovey Street in Newton, and my brothers and sisters grew up there. And my sister has spoken earlier. She's from 5 Hovey Street, and she stated lived in Newton her entire life. There were many families whose parents first bought in this immediate area, and now their children live in those same homes. There are many parents that were at a similar meeting to this one many years ago, fighting to keep the property that we're talking about residential. There were some very beautiful homes on Hovey Street that were allowed to be demolished. My father and many others in the neighborhood fought long ago to keep the residential property zoned residential for many reasons. To keep the neighborhood as a residential family neighborhood, to keep the value of the homes and the desirability of the neighborhood intact. At one time, we were discussing the disturbance of lighting at Clay Chevrolet and how that would impose on the neighbors. Little by little, more has been allowed. Having recently been on the team that sold 4 Hovey Street, I can tell you that it would have been much more difficult, a sale, had there been a large commercial property of this in that area. If we allow such an extremely large structure to encompass a residential property, then what's stopping any one of the homes on in that area to also be allowed as commercial use. And more importantly, across the street where Walgreens is now, that could be transformed into something like this. What was once desirable city to live in, commercial structures, and now, you know, we're not regarding the families that made it the most desirable neighborhood. As a realtor, I can tell you that my sister's property at 5 Hovey Street, who is a direct abutter, will be severely impacted by this approval. And the value and desirability will be greatly diminished for both the potential sale of the property and absolutely by the lease of the apartment. The view from her property, there's a second floor deck. Instead of enjoying grass scenery, she'll be looking directly at the back of the building, which is going to be, you know, bringing in possibly ambulances. And as was stated, the 9-to-5 is just for deliveries, but emergency vehicles could come at any time of the night. I'd like you to all picture your own home and see if you would like to live next to something like that.
Thank you, ma'am. On this side of the room, can you just have a show of hands of who wants to speak? All right, we'll start in front with this gentleman here. Whichever gentleman, come on up, then you, sir, next we'll move back.
Hi, I'm Peter Kronberg. I live at 86 Jewett Street, a little further away from this site. Just want to say very briefly, I thought the car dealerships trashed our neighborhood. They used us and they abused us. I didn't even realize that those two lots weren't zoned commercial. And now we're going to enshrine this decision and not scale it back now when we have a chance to. I think that's disgraceful. Absolutely disgraceful. And I hope you guys will make the right decision here. I think we should keep this thing smaller.
Thank you, sir. Next, please. First row, sir. Come on up. And then I'll go to the row behind that. Anyone in that row wants to speak? If not, I'll go to the one behind that. Good evening, sir.
Hi, good evening. My name is Scott Curry. I'm one of the family members that own the property. My grandfather bought the property back in the 50s before the Mass Pike was even there, if you can believe that. When our family had a disagreement with Nissan, we planned to keep it as a dealership and pass it on to next generations, but my family had disagreements. We looked at other options. In that, we've been a part of the community for a long time. I'm third generation. We've really tried to do, you know, right by the neighbors and try to do the best we can with operating a dealership and keeping the manufacturer happy. When we looked at all the things that came up to us, there were other automotive, there was retail, there was housing development, so we had lots of offers. One of the things we just have been part of the community for a long time, we did not want to go through. We wanted something that was going to work for the community, that was going to work for the family, and that was going to work for the tenant. And we really, after looking at all the options, I mean, some of them we were like, no way, it's just not going to work, the community's not going to want it, it doesn't work for us, it doesn't work for them. Sunrise, when they came to us, we were like, one, senior living is in utmost need, it's desirable, Newton is a desirable location for both residential, for businesses. When we looked at all that, Sunrise is the best in the industry at what they do. And when we saw this project, we really thought that it was a win-win for everyone. We're going to own it for a long time, multiple generations, and we thought that this would be a great, of all the things that came up, this was the best fit. And I just urge you really to look at this and approve this. We're really trying to do it right by the community. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. On this side, moving back, third row back, anyone? Come on up, please, and I'll just keep going until we're done. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Kelly Wallace. I live on Parmenta Road in Newton. I have 3 boys in the Newton public school system. We spend our summers at Crystal Lake, and we spend our winters hoping and praying that the cold freezes over so that we can go there and play hockey.
I live about 2.5 miles from the proposed site, and I am proud to say, fiercely proud to say, I am also a Sunrise employee. I work out of my home, and I have for 11 years. The one thing that I feel is missing from this conversation that I'd like to bring to light. We have the potential for 120 people moving into Newton who have lived through World War II, the Great Depression, the space race. And when I think about my three boys learning about those things in a textbook versus being able to come into a community and sit down with a resident and just to ask them, what was it like living during the Great Depression? To me, that is taking something black and white and turning it into color. That is one of the opportunities that we have. I also think about myself being 85. I don't want to leave Newton. I think about myself being 85 years old. I no longer have a career. My children no longer need me. And I think about being socially invisible. I'm not needed in society. I don't have a critical role anymore. And I think about that. And I think about some 15-year-old kid from Newton North walking through the front door, sitting down with me, and saying, hey, what was it like to leave during 9/11? What was it like when that happened? How did that team airplane travel? And I would feel, as somebody who's, 85, socially invisible, the meaning it would give me, the purpose. So, when we talk about, when I hear people say that this, the proposal, what's in it for me, there's so much in it for us as a community, as an intergenerational opportunity. My son, one of them was 10, he plays the piano. He has this thing called perfect pitch. And he's 10, didn't hear anything, and he can immediately play it. He would be at that community, and he would be playing his piano for these residents. There is a children's toy box in every Sunrise community. We want the kids from the neighborhood to come in. We want them to be a part of Sunrise. We want them to mix with the residents. These are people who have raised children. They want the kids around. We don't want to be isolated. We want to be part of the community. But anyway, back to Knox for a second. My son, he's 10. So he would love to come to the community and play. Today he had a piano lesson, and he sat down with his teacher, and they did the duet. And I could not help but look at them as they were sitting on the piano bench, elbow to elbow. I couldn't help but think, what if he was elbow to elbow with a resident in that Sunrise community? And I don't know who would be getting more out of that, Knox, the resident, or myself as a proud mom, but the way I look at it, we all win. So, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next, please, come on up. Anyone else on this side want to speak? Anyone else, come on up. And
I'm Ann Sala. I live on Woodward Street. So I've lived in Newton my entire life. I'm 25 years old. I went to Service Oak Hill and then over to Newton North. So I'm very proud to say I've lived in Newton my whole life. Also very proud to say I've been a Sunrise employee for almost 2 years now. Speaking as just a Newton resident with the benefit of knowing and having experienced what Sunrise has to offer the community that it's located in, I see this project as a tremendous opportunity for all Newton residents. I can't speak as a resident of this particular neighborhood, but just in general, I could go on all day about the volunteer opportunities for students and kids and just everyday citizens of all ages and the partnerships for local businesses and really going back to my Newton North days where I currently volunteer. I coach during the winter there with my dad, John Stella. Spending all the time going to and from the Y as a Newton North athlete, having a place like Sunrise, such an inviting community in this particular location on Washington Street, I feel like it will open up, just make the area a lot more walkable and accessible to you know, students, commuters, everything of the sort. And I think it's in Newton's best interest to give a place like Sunrise a chance that can, you know, bring the quality of life to all of our aging citizens. I think about all my friends and, you know, friends I went to high school with or people I've met since working who have had to move to other towns to get the care that they need, and bringing that back to Newton, where they're from, where their churches are, where their kids are, where their grandkids' sporting events are, I think that would be a huge opportunity to miss out on. So, thank you.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Tamara Bliss. I live at 9 Lewis Street, which is a little less than a mile from this property. During the past 8 years, I have had the good fortune to get to know many Newton seniors who have chosen to remain in their homes as they grow older. But I have also seen firsthand the devastation that chronic illness, and especially dementia, in many older residents. As much as they wish to remain at home, it often becomes unsafe. However, there is a shortage of viable housing, especially memory care facilities, for our residents. I would think every one of you, city councilors, planners, know people who have no longer can stay at home, they can't be cared for by a spouse. We have former city councilors who are living in facilities in Westwood and other locations because we do not have enough of this type of housing in Newton. I think that it is, yes, it is commercial in the sense it's owned by somebody, but these are real people. And they're 85, 90, 95, maybe 100 years old who are seeking this housing. It's critical to look ahead. According to a planning department memo, right now, 3 years ago, only 27% of the households were headed by someone over 65. By 2030, that's going to be 40%, and probably the fastest growing demographic are people over 85 for whom this facility is truly needed. According to a UMass Center for Social and Demographic Research on Aging that was commissioned by our Council on Aging, right now, more than one-third of our households are elderly. And they studied and found that people want to remain in their own homes. Yes, that's great. I'm all for it. But if they were asked, if a health problem developed, could be Parkinson's, it could be MS, it could be dementia, where would you prefer to live? And they found among the oldest residents that almost 40% wanted to go to an independent living community and 33% to an assisted living facility. They knew they could no longer manage on their own. And when you think about the importance of keeping people in your home, it's the spouse who may no longer drive, who would like to only have maybe a friend take them a mile to get to see their partner, and not 20 miles. And that's true for keeping ties with friends. Let's face it, 1 in 9 people age 65 and older will get Alzheimer's. 1/3 of people over 85 will have Alzheimer's. This is the type of facility we need, not an old-fashioned nursing home, but a new type of memory unit. As Newton's population ages, we need to ensure that we have adequate facilities to provide for the needs of our most vulnerable residents. These are not outsiders. These are our husbands, our wives, our sisters, our grandparents. By having these facilities in Newton, we will enable long-time residents to remain in the community they love and make it easier for spouses, family, and friends to visit. Sunrise Living is proposing a facility that can accommodate seniors with a wide range of needs, so maybe just 15 or 30 minutes a day to around-the-clock care for those suffering from acute memory loss. I encourage you to support the needs of our fellow seniors by granting the zoning change and special permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone? We're going to keep the, let me be clear, I'm going to keep the public hearing open, so this will not be the last time you'll have an opportunity to speak. Is there any other member of the public who wishes to speak this evening? All right, seeing none, are there any questions? I'm going to just ask, Peter, why don't you, if the board goes first, perhaps. Are there any questions or comments that you want to make either to the developers, council or developer, or to the planning department? We just maybe use the microphone.
How many of the units are actually one unit?
So this building, again, has 85 total units. The plan will be 55 assisted living and 30 memory care, although it may shift to 50 and 35. I'm sorry, 50 and 35 because there's the two levels. 50 and 35 memory care.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a question regarding the open space in the rear, in the back of the building. Is it going to be completely open to the public, to the neighbors, or is it going to be, would they close at night? I don't know.
The concept there was, again, we were trying to create a space that would allow for the neighbors to actually congregate together the way that they talked about how wonderful the neighborhood is. Today, that is completely fenced off and locked. You cannot go into that space. Our goal is to open it up. We're going to have the labyrinth area, the benches, all the berms. That'll be opened up for the community. We will have a fence that will protect and secure our side, but that side will be opened up. And as far as security and the like, you know, we'll probably put a fence there as well with the gates in the evenings. Our executive directors can go back, lock the gate in the evenings, and in the mornings unlock the gate so the residents can go back in. So clearly we want to have security for that area so kids and people don't go back there late night, but open it up for the community during the day.
So the vision is some kind of a park, essentially, which is open during daylight hours. Is that the idea?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the whole concept was to do exactly what the community we talked about. I mean, these are wonderful people. We've had amazing meetings so far, and it is very clear that it is a close-knit community. No one asked us to do this. We simply felt that it would be important because we are a neighborhood entity as well to be able to create that space. That's why it's there.
Thank you. Anyone else? More questions? Jonathan? Anyone? Peter?
So I just have a couple of clarifying questions. First of all, this ramp and retaining wall and landscaping on one side of the property, I didn't get a really good sense of what that looks like. Do you have a shot of...
Well, effectively, do we have that? Can you bring up that axiometric? Along that property line where today you have the wall of the existing building, that will be a fence, a 6-foot-high fence with landscaping on our side, although we'll work with the neighbors if we need to create some landscaping sculpture edge on their side as well.
Yeah,
there. So between that retaining wall and, you know, on the left-hand side of it, that'll be some landscaping and fencing.
So how wide, the planning department's description is that there's an area between the retaining wall and the abutting property that's narrow, or they call it albeit narrow. How much
is it? It's not walkable. I mean, it would be locked. I mean, it would just have some trees along that edge. Is that what you're asking?
Well, I'm trying to find out how much space there is.
How many feet from the retaining wall to the edge of the property? Is that what you're looking for?
I think I'm hearing that it's about 10 feet.
From the retaining wall.
From the western boundary, let me see. So this is where the property line is, and from this portion of the line it's roughly about 9 to 8 or 9 feet, wide enough to install some evergreen trees. As it gets closer over here where the property line joins a little bit, it narrows down to roughly about 5 to 6 feet.
This retaining wall is actually for the purpose of because the slope, the garage, so it has to drive down into the garage, so there is a 10-foot drop there. And on top, the grate is actually level with the neighbor right there. But on top of that wall, where the to make sure the tunnel happens, on top of that wall, you by code you're required to put up a 4-foot barrier to prevent accidental fall into the pit.
Thank you. So just so I can be clear, the retaining, where it's a lengthy retaining wall or a tall retaining wall, it's actually because you're going below grade.
It is.
The retaining wall will be at grade and there's going to be a 4-foot fence on top of that. Is that the idea?
The retaining wall will be extended up approximately 4 feet. The code requires 42 inches, but in this case it's 4 feet. The purpose of that is to prevent people from the high side from falling into the
left. I'm just trying to get a sense. The retaining, above grade, the retaining wall is going to be, with the fence is going to be roughly 4 feet in total?
4 feet.
Okay.
Along the property line, there is a wooden fence at this point.
And that is, and whether that stays or not is something that's open for discussion?
Exactly. I believe the conversation is underway with the neighbor. Yes.
All right. Carly, I'm sorry, can I? Go ahead.
And just one last question. When the traffic study was done, the red dot at the Church Street and Washington Street intersection seemed to be close to the to your property. And I was wondering, was traffic speeding into Washington from Church Street during rush hours also measured?
Yes, we have the data that from both the morning and afternoon from Church and Washington.
That was part of it.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. All set? Great. Colleagues, President Lennon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, with the understanding that we're keeping the hearing open and that we're not voting tonight, the anticipation would be, I thought there was some good points raised about potentially some things we'd like to see for the next meeting. Specifically, want to ensure that we do have renderings from all the backyards. I think that would be very important to have. Also, in some other projects like this, we've actually been able to see some distances from building to building. So not only the renderings from the backyards, but, for instance, how far the building is from Ms. Flanagan's property and some of the properties along Jewett Street, I think it would be important to see the actual distances building to building.
I think Attorney Bookbinder is taking copious notes.
Yeah, we're happy to do that.
And that'll also include renderings, too. So that's what I had heard. And then I think it's important because there is some information that's been provided. Some of the abutters obviously have some concerns about increased traffic, but I think we saw very clearly that based on the existing use going to the potential use, there's a significant decrease in traffic. So I'm only thinking we may want to drill down into that a little further, just so that if folks want to ask more questions on that, and I know we saw some numbers with regard to peak time, but there's a concern if there's ambulance runs and things like that. I mean, I know we had gotten some, or we had at least requested at one of the community meetings about the impact, the fire department's calls that would go there. And I know that we specifically mentioned that Evans Park across the pike had some experience with doing that, so we try to coordinate those numbers so that they would have an idea of what that would be.
Yes, we can provide all of that.
All right, so those are some things I have right now. And on the issue that you talked about with the open space, I know when this idea was originally pitched and we said, I think one of the things that I had just mentioned was that there was open space there now, and I thought it was important to keep some of that open space. So again, if it's something that the neighborhood would like to provide more input on, I'm actually kind of pleased to hear that you're going to keep it as open space, because then if not, the lot could potentially down the road, whether it's not you or someone else, it could be developed. So I think we're trying to be respectful to say that there is open space there now, and we'd like to keep some of that open space. So again, it's still subject to discussion as we work our way through this, but I just wanted to make everybody understand that that's sort of where that came from when we were having some of these conversations. So,
Well, that's why we're here, and again, I just want to reiterate that we'll have all of this information before the next hearing, but we will reach out, and we're happy to try to have another community meeting, at which time we would also have this information available.
Thank you. Councilor Schwartz and Larry, then Sangiello. Oh, Larry, then Schwartz and Sangiello. Go ahead.
So there were a few questions raised today from the public, and I'd like to get some information on it. One of them, I think, did come up at one of the community meetings, was regarding emergency vehicles and whether or not there'll be any ambulances coming on Hovey Street, or whether they'll, and how you handle that if a resident does get sick in the middle of the night, or if you do need medical care.
Sure. The information we had, Franklin, will you please? I know I have it in the file, but was it about two trips a week is what the fire department is experiencing? Okay, so the fire department said for the facility that's across the Mass Pike about two to three visits a week. They would not come on Hovey Street. They would enter directly from Washington Street into the main entrance. The Hovey Street driver, if you will, is only for deliveries only.
Okay, so you're talking about the other facility on the other side of the pike. There's about two ambulances a week?
Two to three visits a week on an average.
And how many units or beds are in that facility?
I don't know.
Is it comparable in size?
I'm being told it's bigger. I can't say that of my own knowledge, but I'm hearing this bigger. It's bigger. We can find out.
Okay. You also talked about expect small-scale delivery vehicles that would be coming during the 9 to 5 delivery time. Can you be more specific of what kind of truck or vehicle in terms of tonnage or axles?
I can't speak to tonnage or axles. I mean, generally, they're box trucks.
These are
deliveries from local grocers and things. We generally buy locally most of our food.
Okay.
So it'll be that or our supplies that are the hard goods supplies. I'd say probably the biggest is the trash truck. That's probably the biggest one that comes.
So you'd never have like a semi truck or an 18-wheeler?
Generally, no. I mean, look, obviously there are similar circumstances before major emergencies where we'll bring significant amounts of medicine and water and food to the community, and oftentimes that's delivered with a large truck, but those might just pull up on Washington Park and start, but that's a very, very rare occurrence.
Can you remind me how long the construction period would be?
So this is a 14 to 16 month construction period with heavy construction in the first, 6 to 8 months in that range.
Okay. We don't have to discuss it now, but at a further meeting, I would like to discuss more details about the type of construction, the noise, and how it might impact the neighbors.
Larry, I'm just going to ask that for our next meeting, we perhaps have some kind of draft order which can include some kind of construction management plan.
Would you prefer that I just send in my questions?
No,
I don't have too many more. And then I'd like to get some information about the concern was raised about diminished property values. So is there any information on this at any other similar type facility on how it might impact it, or how could we compare it?
Yeah, thank you. I think that, first of all, we commissioned a study by a registered MAI who specifically studied real estate property values in and adjacent to assisted living buildings in this market and those of comparable homes within that same neighborhood but not adjacent to. The study definitively found that there is no degradation in property values. Sunrise is a 35-year-old company. Like I said, we have 315 properties. Fortunately, our statistics are good. Our neighbors love us. We don't see diminishing property values. In fact, in many cases, we see increases because it's such a stable, beautiful use with great landscaping. We will submit that report, though, if you'd like to.
Okay, what was the name of the company again?
I didn't give you the name. I'm sorry. I don't have it in front of me. The name of the report,
the name of the company,
I don't remember the name. I have to.
Okay.
But you'll get
it. But I can submit
report.
That report.
Okay, thank you.
All set, Councilor? All set. Councilor Schwartz and Sangiello.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So thank you to everyone, both the petitioner and the public. I think that the questions and the
and the comments have been very informative to me, at least. You know, as we always find, these projects are a little bit more complicated than initially may seem, and certainly once you learn about a community, you probably see some of the complexities yourself. A couple of things that I think would be useful, just to echo, I think that echoing the President's comments about the traffic, you know, I do know that as an industry, you know, transportation folks look at, and planners look at different types of use, and this is one of the lighter uses as far as traffic, but I guess what I'm curious about is I don't remember or know what the intensive use of car dealerships tends to be. I don't know how often people buy cars or go to look at cars, so I was a little bit surprised that there were 75 peak hour trips, you know, were those employees? I mean, it just seemed like a lot for a car dealership of this size in a 2 hour rush hour period. So obviously, if the intensity of assisted living as well, if those numbers are higher than they might otherwise be, it seems like a big drop. I'm just wondering if it's really quite as big a drop.
Well, the data that I put on the board was generated based on Institute of Transportation Engineers data for a trip generation manual, and the data that is built into that manual is counts that were actually conducted at similar type facilities all over the country. So, and there's, I'm pretty sure in the car dealership category, there is a lot of data points. So there's a lot of solid data available to us. And so when you apply that to the Clay site, the numbers are the numbers. And, you know, it can vary a little bit up or down depending on the location, the access, all of these different things. But I think what we demonstrated in the slides we presented was that the differential is significant enough to know and be very confident in the fact that we are a much less intense use assisted living than what currently or formerly was there. So I think I'm very comfortable saying there's no question the traffic will be less than what it would be as a car dealership.
Randy, did you take, I'm just asking Randy, did you take account of the fact that it's not only a dealership but a service facility as well? I just wanted
to service is built into the category. Some dealerships have it, others do not, but most do, and so it's built into the category that we utilize.
I understand. And do you also do a kind of rate, a prorating for the square footage of the facility?
Yeah, the rate that's used is based on the square footage because dealerships range from, you know, very small to really large. And so we developed, the IT manual developed the rate per square footage. That's exactly what we applied to the existing facility.
So you took, may I just
please
follow up?
Go ahead.
You took the existing square footage of the Clay facility and used that for your basis?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
And just related, I know that sometimes when you mentioned some signal changes, some upgrades, certainly in the past, I know that that has often been factored in as an improvement in the flow, and that I forget the, what is it called?
Level of service.
Level of service, thank you. Have you looked at that in this particular site and how that might affect the level of service, the improvements that you're talking about?
We did, and it's detailed in the traffic work that we presented to the city, and the city staff has responded to us on that. The long story short is that with the reduction that we anticipate on site, we don't see any change. In fact, we might see a slight improvement. I say slight improvement because we're adding a fourth leg to what is really a three-way signalized intersection. So by adding another leg, you will incur a little delay. So we're not going to see as much of an improvement as we would based on just the volume if the fourth leg was introduced or it was connected today. It is not. By adding that leg, we lose a little bit, but still the differential is enough for us to see a slight improvement overall.
Okay, and then that's very helpful. Thank you. Separate from the traffic issues, I also heard some comments about emergency vehicles and Medicare and Medicaid and payments and stuff. I hope that before the next hearing, we could perhaps hear more about what assisted living really is. As a physician, I know it's what it's not, and it's not nursing homes. But I know that what you're talking about is having some memory units as well, so I think that might be confusing to the community. So if you could clarify a little bit more what the services that really will be provided here, I think that would help people understand that, you know, are there going to be, you know, huge numbers of ambulances? Is it going to be more people going to the doctor and, you know, non-siren kind of vehicles? That would be helpful also as far as this belief that, you know, not taking certain insurances and stuff like that. I think assisted living is generally not covered by medical insurance, so that's important for people to understand. And then finally, I guess we heard something about the opportunities, certainly from some of the employees, some of the opportunities for community involvement and community engagement that you've had at your other sites. I think that would be helpful for me to understand a little bit more for the community benefit outside of the parkland that you're talking about, just the actual involvement of your residents in, you know, school and other types of events, just how you work it in other communities. It sounds potentially very rich, but I think it would be helpful for people to understand just what the options are, what the kind of potential is.
Sure, we'll do that.
Thanks. And just one last clarification. I think that on the, I was confused initially, but I think I understand this, and correct if I'm wrong. The park in the back, really the labyrinth is a small portion of that whole wooded area. There will be a fence between the wooded area and the labyrinth,
yes.
Which that will be gated at all times, and then the labyrinth is open to the public, but that might be gated at night.
That's exactly correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilor Santagiola?
So I had a question along with similar lines of Councilor Schwartz. So I've been looking at a bunch of these type of facilities, and I wasn't sure exactly what your model is. And when you talk about assisted living, are you going to have, and I understand from the pamphlet it says all the services will be conducted on site, but does that mean that folks are not the physical therapist, the occupational therapist, they won't be coming, are they counted as your 25 employees, or are they people who are hired, with, whether it's through you guys or through the patients or residents, to come onto the site?
Yeah, the latter is true. So we have our own employees that provide care to our residents with their five activities of daily living, walking, bathing, dressing, going to the bathroom, and eating. If a resident needs occupational physical therapies, we have a small space dedicated within our building for a couple of therapists to come in on a daily basis, and sometimes doctors as well, to come in and provide those therapies to our residents.
So, are you limiting the number of those employees that come on a daily basis, or are you regulating the times that they come? For instance, you have, I guess, but it's 85 units, but 122 beds. So let's say 40 of the residents might need some type of service. Do you schedule them so that you don't have all these extra services coming in at the same time? Do you stagger them? Sure. How does that work?
So, first of all, we have three shifts of our standard employees for getting the therapies that we were just talking about. Typically, that's from 6:30 to 2:30, 2:30 to 11:30, and then the overnight. And our typical shift is about 25 to 30 employees in the morning, about 15 to 20 employees in the afternoon, and about 4 to 6 in the evening. Now, the reason why it's flexible is we have what's called a variable staffing model. We evaluate the needs of each one of our residents. We assess those residents' specific needs, and based upon that resident's needs, we assign a certain number of hours for that resident to be cared for. And each resident has their own designated care manager. So in terms of the movement of the staff, it flexes with the resident's needs.
But that's your internal staff. I'm talking about your external staff for the additional care that each individual resident might need.
Those are sort of in and out. It's a nominal impact on the overall staffing. So, you know, they're there. There's, you know, typically maybe a couple, three therapists, if that much, and maybe a doctor that are in. And they come in and out as the residents need or as they make appointments with those residents.
So the one of the reasons that I bring this up is that I've been contacted by actually staff from the Falls at Cordingley Dam. And apparently when we, I think that was a special permit before I got on the council, but I guess there's not enough parking on Washington Street and not enough parking on site because they found that sometimes they're, you know, as residents age or as new residents come in or their needs change, that they may need additional care that is not provided by the in-house staff.
That's a great question. I really appreciate it. I think that as it relates to many other sunrises, we obviously have good experience in the number of spaces we need relative to the number. We have slightly more spaces per unit here than we would have elsewhere. And this is an urban setting where we would expect more employees to come by public transportation. So we feel very confident that we have an adequate number of spaces to not only serve our staff, but our resident families when they come and go.
Okay, so I guess I'd ask the planning department if you could pull up the special permit and find out how many, what the ratio is for the residents and the parking and staff. I think we could do that kind of comparison. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Crosley?
Thank you. I have a number of questions. None have to be answered right now. Some may be a combination of planning department and petitioner. First of all, regarding the affordability, the inclusionary zoning ordinance and its application to this project, I understand you're going to work out some kind of a proposal with the planning department that may be a payment, but I'd like to understand a little bit better what the cost of your services are. And whether or not, or what would the reason be for not including some affordable beds in the project? And what does that mean? I don't know what the level of affordability for a bed in an assisted living project is.
I want to be careful, Ms. Young. Are we allowed to inquire about that issue?
It's about how they propose to meet the inclusionary zoning
ordinance. About what we're asking for.
We certainly can walk through what the formula calls for, but the problem that we've had as we've dealt with it is that the affordability and what can be done doesn't cover all the costs of the services. I mean, we ran across this from the first when we were dealing with it at, it was Vernon Court. And so, again, we'll be prepared to explain what the recommendation is and how the zoning ordinance operates, which is to say that there's going to be a shortfall, and that's the dilemma we confront when we try to put in affordable actual beds into these facilities.
Well, okay, so I'll just be interested to learn that. As it happens, I also have spent time over the last couple of years looking for independent and actually stepped living opportunities for my folks, and they won't have anything to do with it. But what we found along the way is there's an enormous range of costs relative to different levels of quality, or different levels of care, different ways to buy into the project. I guess it would be helpful to me to understand what your company offers from that point of view. What level are you at within the range?
Sure, we can do that. And just to follow up on Rudy's comments, which I appreciated, there's really two components here. There's a residential component. You're getting a roof over your head, so to speak, but then there's the service component, and that's why it's hard to plug this in to the inclusionary housing model.
Yeah, I'm not looking for answers. No, I'm just hoping to have a fuller discussion about that the next time, including what our challenge is legally. That would be great. On the building, there was somewhere in the report, I think I understand that your front setback from the property line goes down to 6 feet where 10 foot is required. Is that about right? So,
yeah.
And that seems to me to be at one point in the plan. And then it widens from there. But I would like to just hear from the planning department, I think, about what your opinion is of, and it seems to me to improve the sidewalk and the pedestrian condition. I'd just like to hear from the planning department about that. There was a suggestion by a member of the public to move the main entrance to Hovey Street. It was only one member of the public. I'd like to just hear from you all how you determined your site access and egress and circulation and so forth. I get the plan, and I imagine your ambulances come, if they come, they're coming into the front off Washington Street, which would be a consideration.
But if you could just talk
sure,
to me a little bit. In terms of massing and what President Lenin said, I just would love to add to that just a little bit on a couple of points. I often ask for site sections, very rough level, but just so that you can not just have the distances, but get a handle visually on what it means at different points in the building, pictures, 1,000 words kind of thing. And the planning department asked for a shadow study, which would be great to see. Part of the same thing. With respect to the construction management plan, I'm sure you're going to include something about how you propose to stage the project during construction, where vehicles will be parked and so on and so forth, lay down areas, that kind of thing. Because it's a tight site.
It is.
Finally, someone mentioned that you are you're an Energy Star community or Energy Star something. I wasn't sure I caught the whole thing. I know a lot about some of the Energy Star programs for buildings. The claim was made that you this building performs 35% better than, I think what was said, buildings of its type. I'd love to have something that means a little more than that, because I don't know what that means. We have the stretch code in Massachusetts, and we use it in Newton. I'd love to look to understand what you're proposing and how it performs relative to that benchmark, or to the current code. I think the current one in effect nationally is the IECC 2015. So whatever benchmark you want to use, but something that is more meaningful, just interested. I'm glad to see you using really durable materials and so forth, but I'm always interested in the building envelope, not the Energy Star appliances.
Okay.
Thanks.
Anybody else? All right. We are going to adjourn the public hearing for and the committee meeting for this evening. I'm not going to take any more comments tonight.
Question about draft order you mentioned?
I'll explain.
Okay,
give me a second. So, Ms. Khan, when are we going to take this up again? May 9th. May 9th, we're going to take it up again. President Lenin, is that an issue?
It wasn't why I raised my hand. I suggested that possibly a site visit would be helpful to many members here. The committee to see the building and where it sits and the areas behind.
Why don't we do this?
And we also, I think we brought that up at the community meeting, so I think it might.
Why don't we do this? We are trying to schedule a site visit for Langley, which has been singularly unsuccessful so far, and we're not doing it tomorrow, I take it, are we? We are doing it tomorrow? All right, we'll deal with that offline. I'm sorry. So we're going to take this up May 9th. I think President Lenin, the idea of the site visit is a good one. Let me just explain to the public. Do you have a problem with that, Attorney Buchbinder?
I'm sorry. Mr. Klosner just explained to me. He's got a hearing in New York that's been locked in for a long, long time on May 9th. I don't want to delay this, but...
You're going to get delayed, so that's fine. I mean, it's your issue. When's the next date after that? All right, May 25th? Is that the Tuesday? Is that the fourth Tuesday and we don't have a city council meeting, just a Monday holiday? So we're on the first and third Monday, so we're fine. Good? All right, so it is going to be May 25th. Gives us plenty of time to schedule a site visit. Let me explain to the public what a site visit is. A site visit is when we go to the site as a city council committee, public's welcome to attend, and it's an opportunity for the petitioner to walk us through the site itself. We often walk the site. We've done that on a number of occasions. I'm going to be very clear. It is not an opportunity for any public comment. It's not an opportunity for committee members to debate back and forth the merits of the project. It's simply an opportunity for us to ask
factually based questions with the petitioner and get hopefully factually based answers. But again, the members of the public are welcome to attend, and when we do have that next time, you'll be able to post that for us. All right? And other than that, is there anything else, colleagues? May 23rd. Tuesday, May 23rd. We'll get it right. Okay? All right. We are adjourned. Thank you all very much. Oh, Councilor Crosley? Oh, sir, let me just briefly explain what a board order is. The board order is what is written and issued by the city council, which authorizes a project to go forward. We often ask for a draft board order to be prepared, regardless of whether we're going to approve something in its present form or not, because that has all the conditions, transportation management, all the other things that go into if we issue a special permit, what's going to be allowed. Okay? Thank you all.
Thank you.